Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Most of us solve our online privacy worries by looking for an unbreakable password or a new encryption technique to protect our email and credit card use. But what we don't realize is there's a completely anonymous hidden world coexisting alongside the internet. It handles the digital code transmissions that keep our systems functioning. It holds dark networks that allow communication without exposing IP addresses. So what exactly goes on in the deep web? Well, the new documentary brings it all to the surface. It's called Deep Web, and it's having its international premiere at HopDocs Documentary Film Festival in Toronto. It delves into dark nets, including the Silk Road and the man accused of running it all, Ross Ulbricht. It's written, directed, and produced by Alex Winter. Alex is an actor and pop culture icon known for his excellent adventures, who now is also an accomplished director and documentary filmmaker. He focuses on the history of the right now, the changes we're all witnessing on and offline, more or less as they're happening. And I'm very pleased to have Alex Winter by telephone from Los Angeles to tell us more about Deep Web. Hi, Alex.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. So what is the Deep Web?
Well, it's simple and complicated all at the same time. The Deep Web really just refers to an aspect of the internet that accounts for all of the unindexed data that's just flying around, sort of like looking under the hood of your car. It's not necessarily a place. It's literally just banking data, administrative code, all the sort of gunk underneath the internet that people use to get data from one area to another. And it's significantly larger than the visible internet, than the surface web. So that's the deep web. What's happened over the course of the history of the internet is people have sort of used that space, that unindexed, unseen aspect of the internet, to create something called the darknet. And the darknet is essentially a part of the internet that allows for private and anonymous communication. And it was created by the government originally, and it's used primarily by government agents who need private and anonymous communication, as well as journalists and dissidents and sort of anyone who wants to be able to communicate online, either anonymously or privately, and that includes some criminality as well.
So could you mentioned privacy and anonymity. Could you tell what the difference is and why they're both important?
Yeah. Anonymity refers specifically to wanting to communicate with somebody without having to divulge who you are. There's a number of reasons why you're going to want to do that. I'd say the first, most obvious one is government agents who want to communicate with each other, whether law enforcement or intelligence or other areas of world governments that need to communicate without revealing identity. And then there's journalists who have to protect their sources. That's very, very important. It's a big part of how stories get covered. And then there's, dissidents and people who are, functioning in totalitarian regimes. Say you're in Iran, you're in China, you're in some part of Russia where you want to be able to communicate without divulging who you are. And then the privacy aspect is really just our basic human right to privacy. It's if you want to be able to either purchase something or connect with somebody or just speak, use the internet privately without being tracked, without being observed or surveilled. That's frankly just something that almost anybody would really want to do if you think about it. And so there have been privacy and security tools that have been built up around the darknet that are now making their way into sort of our regular internet usage. And there's been a lot of contention and controversy around the right to privacy online, and it gets into much bigger debates that are going on about, civil rights and individual rights in the internet digital age.
Well, Senator Chuck Schumer of New York called Silk Road, that's a network on the darknet, called it the Amazon of illegal drugs. And then he said, we have to shut it down. We have to stop bitcoins because that's the currency used on there, and the darknet in general. So can you comment on that?
Yeah, what tends to happen is you know, through – there's a number of reasons why there's so much institutional pressure from certain people, certain actors and law enforcement actors against this entire these technologies in a blanket fashion. I mean, I think it was Steve Wozniak who said – you know, that the internet is like a highway with many, many lanes, and you don't shut an entire highway down because one car is driving the wrong way or is speeding. And I think that's a good way of looking at these issues, is there may be criminality going on, there may be things that you find threatening for a number of reasons going on around privacy and anonymity technology, but that's not a reason to demonize all of these technologies and all the people using the technologies and shut the whole thing down. I mean, first of all, you can't shut it down because these are largely decentralized systems that don't have a single point of control and are not going to be just shut down by flicking a switch. So what you're finding is in the Silk Road case, the Silk Road was a centralized system, meaning it had one server, I should say. It had a central server with a central point of control, and that was seized eventually and shut down. But of course, you know, a gazillion copycats just popped up immediately, and now there are significantly more of these markets online than there were when the Silk Road first appeared. So it's just not something that you can easily counteract.
It's like a hydra. You cut off one head and three more pop up.
Completely. That's just the way the technology works. And there's a lot of people out there who really believe in these technologies, so they keep building them.
So in your film, you describe Silk Road as not just a marketplace, but also a community, a communication base. Could you talk about that?
I had a look at these internet-based technologies. It was the same thing with Napster when I did the Napster movie Downloaded. Sort of all you tended to hear in the media when Napster was happening was that it was this, you know, music piracy service. And, you know, having grown up around the birth of the internet and sort of its eruption in the late 80s, I got very involved in the internet around that time, in the BBS and Usenet era, and started to see these kind of growing online communities. And then in 1999, when Napster hit, it was very obvious to me that this was a watershed moment, and we had gone from these online communities being somewhat rarefied to now with Napster, and this is the very first time in history this has happened, you had 60, 70, 80 million simultaneous users around the world on this online community. That, to me, Napster significance is almost completely around that that seismic change, much less to do with music, and I think that aspect of it will fade away over time.
Napster was the site that people used to exchange mainly musical recordings, files.
Well, yeah, Napster was actually a community service where you were able to connect with people around the world, chat with them in real time, trade all kinds of stuff with them in real time. They could go into your hard drive, you could go into their hard drive, they could be looking at stuff that was just yours, you could be looking at stuff that was just theirs. It was a massive, massive community, and this was long before Facebook or MySpace or anything like that. I mean, there had just never been anything vaguely like it. It was a huge change in the way the world functioned. So, and it happened almost overnight because of the effectiveness, the efficiency of the technology. Silk Road is a similar watershed in the sense that what it did was it took the idea of community, global internet community, and it married it with Tor, the onion router, which is the technology that many people use to get into the darknet, and Bitcoin, which is a cryptocurrency that is capable of being anonymous, that is not by nature anonymous, but you can make it anonymous. So now you've got people around the world communicating with each other and transacting with each other that are both anonymous and hidden and using a currency that is also off the grid. So that's a big game changer. That's you know, threatening to people on a number of levels, even if drugs weren't involved. It just takes people completely out of the system if they want to be out of the system. On a huge, efficient level. Again, people have been doing this since the birth of the internet. There have always been people who have been transacting anonymously outside the grid. But with Silk Road, you sort of took the robust scaling technology of something like Napster, and you married it with these more rarefied privacy and anonymity tools, and then you suddenly had a million users worldwide transacting on this service. I mean, I would maintain that even if drugs had nothing to do with it, there would have been a lot of impetus from, you know, the government and business interests to shut this thing down. But then you add on top of that that it's primarily transacting every manner of drugs, and you've got a bonfire on your hands, and that's essentially what the movie is looking at.
But something like that can't just be unilaterally cut out or stopped, can it?
No, but, you know, the fact is what it represents, and the movie is, you know, it's not saying that it's just a great thing that should be allowed to happen. It's just saying that we are living in extremely complex times, and things are happening at an extremely quick rate, and technology is evolving, and, you know, technology is not a mindless beast, as it's often sort of portrayed. It is, you know, there are people behind these technologies, and so there are often political ideals behind these technologies or socially oriented ideals behind these technologies. People don't create a service for no reason, and it's not so cynical as to say they just create these services for the purposes of getting rich. It's actually very hard to get rich operating these services. And most of the people in Silk Road, in fact, none of the people that I dealt with were rich by any stretch of the imagination. They were living like grad students. They were very much about the ideals and very much not about money. And, you know, so there are laws that haven't been created yet that are going to need to be created in order to accommodate this new world that we've entered. And that's where we run into problems.
And can you have a nation or a state or a city pass a law that works on the deep web, which is a supernatural body, meaning it's like transcends natural barriers?
You can. Yeah. No, you can. You can absolutely begin to regulate how those aspects function on the one hand. On the other hand, there can be very specific laws for, say, search and seizure, for instance. You know, the laws for search and seizure in the physical space are much less punitive than they are for the digital space. So that needs to change. So there are, you know, just laws in terms of how those laws apply. If they apply to the digital space, and people get in, and there are a lot of people working on this. This is not, you know, J.P. Barlow, I think, back in the 90s, wrote a manifesto about how law was going to need to change. I think it was even the early 90s. And, you know, 20-some-odd years later, very little has been done to accommodate that we live in a completely different world than we did when these laws were constructed.
What do you think needs to be done, if anything, should it be regulated? Should it be controlled in any way? Or is it just better as an open Agora marketplace?
Well, the internet, it's really about what is. The internet is open. You can't shut it down. You can attempt to shut it down. The TPP and net neutrality and SOPA and CISPA and all of these various attempts to, you know, put your arms around this thing and then control it and then just start charging people for it. Those are always going to be met with resistance because you're dealing with a world of cryptographers that are extremely sophisticated, and they want their internet open. And if you put barriers around it, they will create new ways of communicating. And there are ways to network that function beyond the way the internet works. And if people are forced to create essentially a new internet, they will. So it's a game of cat and mouse until there's some degree of acceptance that we have to live with an open internet, because that is A, what people want, and it's B, how the technology functions at its fundamental base.
So fascinating topic. Thanks so much for talking with me about it.
Yeah, sure is.
Thanks a lot. I've been speaking with Alex Winter's new documentary, Deep Web, is having its international premiere at Hot Docs in Toronto on Monday. Go to hotdocs.ca for details. This is Daniel Garber, the movies for CIUT 89.5 FM, and on my website, culturalmining.com.